Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hello, Egg Chasers. It's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, a podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself too seriously. And this is your Premiership restart preview. I'm Tim. There's Phil.
Hello, Tim.
And there's JB.
Hello, Tim. How are you?
I'm extremely well. How good is it? This, wonder whether this day would ever come. We've still got a few days to go, but
I just want to stake out some territory here. I want to do a bit of housekeeping before we continue. I'm happy to do this podcast with you, but some ground rules, Tim. No getting on Steve Diamond's back.
Stop continuing this little thing that Craig Doyle and Ugo were doing on that quiz the other night, trying to make it sound like I hate Steve Diamond and Sale.
Like, can I just point something out? Right, Steve Diamond is a hero to the local working community of Manchester, Sale, Cheshire, and Lancashire. What he's done for rugby around here is unbelievable. And what do you do? Well, your records speak for itself.
Tim, I was delighted to hear you've got a vendetta against Steve Diamond and the abhorrent Sale Sharks plan new stadium, which is going to ruin communities.
I mean, if you think about what rugby has given us three, and between the two of you, you're trying to sink both the stadium and Steve Diamond's career. You're both massively out of order.
Just going to say for the record one more time, I think Steve Diamond is a brilliant character that rugby is all the better for having. And I thoroughly enjoy our little head-to-head interviews, which have made for some brilliant TV down the years.
Yeah, that's right. Keep on grovelling.
I have to say, Tim, I thoroughly enjoyed your appearance on the quiz. Well done as well, finishing second behind Ugo. If there was only a couple of spelling mistakes on Parise and Pietau, if just a couple of minor things had gone your way, would have been a big win.
Yeah, I should have had him. Should have had him.
It would have been a big win. Big win.
Should have had him.
No, it's a good quiz. Entertaining.
But on that, I think we should say, and you know, I am completely biased. However, I think everyone in rugby can acknowledge what a fantastic thing BT Sport have done in bringing every single Premiership game whilst there is, and they haven't even, this isn't, by the way, just the end of this season. This is for as long as there are no crowds in stadiums, every game will be televised.
I mean, fair play, that's amazing. Have they sorted out the kickoff times yet?
For most of them, a couple of them are to be confirmed.
Because when, in classic Premiership rugby style, not BT style, I might add, Premiership rugby, big announcement, 10 o'clock. Okay, well, what's the announcement? There's some games on, right? We know that. But they couldn't work out the kickoff times, which is why they're all announced, or most of them were announced with no kickoff times. But that's been overcome now, has it?
In most cases, yes. And I think that there's a lot of moving parts that still haven't been sorted. Like, I was chatting to Alex Lowe from The Times, and he was saying that the exact ins and outs of how the press operate, how they do post-match interviews, if they do post-match interviews, are they done online? Are they allowed in the ground? All of that is still being worked out as we speak. So
I've heard the press conferences afterwards are going to be done from the press seats in the stadium, and you have to basically dial into the coach.
Yeah, I think...
Madness.
I think that might be the case.
And also, I guess when you're interviewing, I mean, I don't know, I'm second guessing, but you have to hand a mask to someone as they walk over to you. Oh, how do they do it on football?
They have a standing microphone at some distance, and then I'll be stood behind the camera.
So we won't even get to see your beautiful hand.
But my wrists. Not going to see my wrists.
God. Well, I guess you'll save on wrist insurance.
True. You know, swings and roundabouts. But no, yeah. Absolutely fantastic that we got every single minute of the Gallagher Premiership on the telly on BT Sport. So if you haven't already, get on it, whether you're on Virgin, you're on Sky, get the app. There's you can get on BT and get every single game. That's a bargain.
One thing that came through with the Premiership rugby statement was the confirmation of next season starting, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And that starts end of November?
20th.
That's right.
I'm just looking at the press release now. Friday 20th of November is confirmed, which is still during the planned international window, because that finishes, I think, first week of December. And there will be a Premiership rugby game for every single weekend of the Six Nations. So from next week, rugby is going to be intense for a full 12-month period because of the Lions Tour as well. For certain individuals, it is going to be intense.
Very difficult one for me, this, because, well, it is and it isn't. So unsurprisingly, after doing a podcast for however many years we've done this, I do quite like rugby. So I'm grateful to have it back, but I can't help but think the product isn't going to benefit from all this constant games over and over again. I mean, it'd be very easy, wouldn't it, for you to switch off from the game for a couple of weeks, and before you know it, you've lost all kind of sense of where the league's at. I mean, this happens to me with Super Rugby every year. I try and watch it, miss out for a couple of weeks, don't know who's good, don't know who's bad. I don't really care much for watching because I don't recognise any of the names. I can see this happening with Premiership Rugby. If there is too much exposure or too many games, not too much exposure, too many games,
and we will see that. So we'll see it for two reasons. The reason that you're pointing out there with the, like, you blink for 2 weeks and you could have missed three games, so you've missed a huge swing. But also, we are going to see in this period, complete in the Premiership season and Pro 14 season, you are going to see some one-sided results where there's three games in a single week. So for at least one of those games, you're going to have a combination of first team slash squad players slash academy players going against what would be, a top four team who still wants the win. You're going to see some 50, 60 points to nil games, which they're not to anyone's benefit, really.
Yeah, exactly right. Exactly right.
And as we'll come on to a little bit later in this pod, there will be some teams who, given that the top four is not 100% decided, but we know who's going to be in it. And given that Saracens are already relegated, there are some teams who this whole period is going to be a pre-season. They will be focusing on the 20th of November because promotion, relegation or relegation next season is what they care about, not playing out these last nine games.
Like Newcastle.
Yeah.
Newcastle, although they're not in these next nine games, they will be focused on that. But maybe a couple of other teams near the bottom end of the table.
They're in a real bind. Do they get their Premiership money? They don't, do they? They've got to fund all these players until they kick a Premiership ball again.
It's a really good point.
I don't know, because they're still a stakeholder in Premiership Rugby. Mm. So they'll get some of the central money, but probably not the TV money as it stands, other than the stuff that goes centrally.
Yep. Leicester Tigers, I think, fit your brief about teams that are treating this as a pre-season.
100%. And they've got the distinct disadvantage of having lost 28 players by my count and having brought in nearly 20 and having a whole new, or maybe not a whole new, but a significantly new coaching structure as well. So trying to integrate all of that together, actually this nine games as a pre-season, for want of a better word, it will probably serve them better than it otherwise would have done. That's not to say that they're going to do well next season.
So, did you see the coach's team picture?
Yeah.
Yeah. Lovely. They all look happy, don't they? Well, Mike Ford didn't look that happy, but...
I'm going to put that picture up in the dungeon, right? And you know, like, there's mafia films and they cross off each face as and when they go. Here is my prediction. This is going to be bloodier than Game of Thrones. That coaching team will not be together. Maybe not by the end of this season, but definitely.
how many, what's your prediction? So there's about 10 people in that picture, was there?
Seven or eight.
Seven or eight.
So There's only one guy that I see as relatively safe. That's Steve Borthwick. I think Jordan Murphy is watching his back for Steve Borthwick. Steve Borthwick is watching his back for Mike Ford. And Mike Ford will probably be watching his back thinking, if anyone rumbles me, i.e. Jordan Murphy, I could be out of here. So you've got a bit of a Mexican standoff, I would say, between those three. And as for everyone else, you don't know when you could be collateral damage.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, seven in there. So, JB, how many do you reckon will be, of that seven, how many will start next season on the 20th of November?
I'm going to say, this is not a very bold prediction, I'd say six will start in November.
Yeah.
Only four will be left by the end of that season. And it'll be a big name. It'll be Murphy or Ford that will go. I think Borthwick's safe, unless... It's like rock, paper, scissors, stone. Isn't it? Murphy can get rid of Ford. Ford can do Borthwick. Borthwick can do...
You've got to watch Succession, because I'm just imagining how it's going to be done. I'm not going to give anything away, but there's one scene in Succession where there's people around a table having an open conversation about which one of them is going to get thrown to the wolves. And,
Murphy, God, Mike Ford, I don't share Andy Good's view on Mike Ford. Most of what I'm saying is kind of in jest. I don't think he's probably as snaky as Goody said, or maybe even what Burgess said. I think there's probably a middle ground there.
But you don't get the CV that he's got without having talent.
Yeah, that's the thing you've got to remember. He's a phenomenally talented coach. I mean, even people that really like him, I don't know, a few of them say he's a brilliant coach. So, you know, if it could all mold together, by the way, what a coaching team.
Hey, you've got to remember. When he was coaching Germany against Hong Kong, was it? Or whoever it was.
Or Canada, maybe.
Canada. When he was coaching Germany against Canada in Montpellier, when we watched, he remembered us all. And came and had a beer. So, you know, that's a big tick in his column.
Yeah, exactly right. I was just going to point out that it reminds me of the Gary Gold scenario, which is when you have so much talent underneath you, you really need a director of rugby.
That also reminded me of the Gloucester position last season with Humphreys and Ackerman, albeit they've solved that conundrum in a totally different way.
That was more like a Red Wedding style exit. Yeah. Wasn't it?
Everyone out.
Everyone dead.
Cherry wedding. As you said before the podcast, Phil, I think we should look at this in terms of the assessing the ins and outs and who's sort of fared best, and then really honing in on that top four running, because as we've said, you know, clubs like London Irish, they'll be happy to be starting their new season in the Brentford Stadium and to still be in there. Saracens, we know what's happening to them. They're just waiting for the Champions Cup quarterfinal against Leinster, and that's what their whole existence revolves around now. And Leicester, as you say, is all about the rebuild. But other clubs, there's a lot more on the line, so we should probably spend a disproportionate amount of time on those clubs.
On the top four, yeah?
But in terms of the ins and outs, who do you think's had the best off season from that point of view, or break?
I think there's only one real team in it, isn't there?
Yes. There's some interesting ins and outs and ups and downs, but the best, for my money, is Bristol.
Really? That's not what I was going to say. All right. Well, let's start there then. So obviously, Kyle Sinclair and Rod Rada have showed up. That's not bad, is it?
So Rad Rada, I think, is the most naturally talented player in the world. He's unbelievably good. He has everything. He can play.
Yeah, he is in the backs what Nakarawa is in the forwards. That just raw natural gifts.
Yeah, he can do everything. Absolutely everything. He can play right across the back line, so he can play in the centre, he can play on the wing, he can play 15. He's enormous. I remember seeing a picture of him topless in Toulon next to Marnonu. Marnonu is quite a big bloke, but Radrada is both bigger and more ripped and jacked than Marnonu.
That's an incredible statement.
I'll find this picture for you. And he is so fast and so strong and such a good all-round ball player. He's not only the best signing, he's probably the best player in the Premiership, and probably the single most talented player in the world. That is how highly I think of Radrada.
Wow.
Would you say most talented player in the world outside of a halfback, or just the most talented player in the world?
Most physically gifted, I'd say. Mm. Naturally physically gifted.
So the Daily Mail wrote an article about him, and they said that he was signed on the strength of a still photo on the size of his legs.
Oh, I was gonna say, Phil, what's his quads like?
Oh, his quads.
There you go.
Everything. And his work ethic is supposed to be sensational as well. And I do know that. So he did Barbarians with Pat Lam, and that was one of the key things to both of them, actually, that Radrada had experience working with Lam, and Lam had experience of working with Radrada, and they both knew the fit would be positive. So I am. If you're a Bristol fan, I would be very, very excited.
I mean, I guess if you're super talented, right? This sounds ridiculous, I know. But if you've got this gift and you realise that you're so gifted, you probably don't want to go to Montpellier. So all those lads are really, really gifted. They play an okay rugby, but you know what you're going to get. And you might end up spending 10 years there and not realising your full potential because of the style of rugby that you're going to play. Mm-hmm. Now, if this is played into his decision or not. But being that gifted and then being able to team up with a coach like Pat Lam, it does have a certain appeal to it.
Definitely.
He's also a brilliant story, because I think in the same Daily Mail piece you're referring to, there was detail I didn't realise. He worked for $2 Australian an hour in a gold mine in Fiji. Played rugby with a coconut.
Yep.
When he was growing up.
Although I always question those stories. I always question them because they just don't sit right with me. It reminds me of the story about Johnny Wilkinson practicing kicking with toilet rolls. Never really happened. Like, he'd kick a toilet roll once in his lounge, but I don't think he would ever recommend anyone practice with toilet roll, or it was a regular staple.
But Johnny May is mates with Kim Jong-un. That is true, though, right?
Definitely.
Hey, Johnny Wilkinson.
Oh, no, sorry. Johnny May is mates with Kim Jong-un, though. That's one of the rugby stories you can believe.
And I'll tell you another one of how rugby was never played, or might have been played, or wasn't frequently played. It was the Romanian soldiers that played rugby with a live explosive. I mean, I'm sure it might have happened once, but it was a staple part of their training.
Oh my word, I'm having a look at Semi Radrada. When he was playing for Parramatta Eels topless, he looks jacked.
He's just...
How is it compared to PS Speaks in terms of pure specimen?
Oh, no, he's not there, but who is?
Yeah. So he might not be that good, sorry, that talented that he can't be good. He might be just talented enough to still have to work. So that's pretty good.
Yeah.
Yes. And to add to, so like if you're totally worried about Radrada, well, then Piatau is going to tear you apart.
Oh, yeah.
So adding those two to that back line.
Wow.
Another handy signing for Bristol, short-term loan deal, is Ben Earl, who's another phenomenal explosive.
Max Malins.
Max Malins is a great player as well.
And then they've got, you know, Luke Morahan's a pretty tidy winger as well. They've got some serious firepower.
Yeah. Obviously, Rod Ward is important and very good. I can't help but think Kyle Sinclair might be the more important signing, though.
Sinclair will be very handy to ensure you've got the platform for those boys to play.
Yeah, because he has gone from an absolute scrimmaging liability when he was 12 or however long it was. But he's a genuinely solid scrimmager. He's more than solid. He's a lion scrimmager now. You know, he can deal with anything in the Premiership. And when he's on his, and this is my criticism of him, when he's on his game, he's unplayable. Like, you might even say that him going down in the England World Cup final, I mean, I'm not sure if it would have changed the outcome necessarily, but it's a huge, huge contributing factor because he does so much special stuff. When he's on his game, he's class. My only worry is he sometimes looked a bit disinterested for Quinns at times.
But yeah, it could totally be Quinns. And I'd back Pat Lam to get the best out of him.
Well, I'm going to spare JB the need to say it, because I think in terms of an upgraded team, by virtue of the fact that Lou Diaga didn't play last season, he was injured, you can count him as an upgrade. And I actually think if you include him in the equation, Sale have upgraded their team the most from one season to the next.
They are built in very different ways, these two teams. So the way I look at it is, Sale is more opportunistically built. As in, I said this on the podcast, as soon as Tuilagi was available, if there is a team out there who can see a deal, see some value, and get that deal done, it will be Sale. So, you know, Tuilagi is very much a bonus there. Whereas I think Bristol, it feels a lot more mapped out. Like, those guys instantly fit their system and what they're trying to do. I think with Sale, they will adapt their system in order to make people like Tuilagi fit in. In fact, they're going to have to. Because if Tuilagi plays in his best position 13, he's going to have to do that at the expense of Sam James, who is a phenomenal player and very, very different to Manu. So, yeah, there's a slight difference in how these two teams have gone about doing their business.
But what I would say, so Bryn Evans has been a really good Premiership player for them, a great line-out tactician for them, and he's done a really good job. But they've upgraded him with a World Cup winner, one of the best locks on earth in Lou Diaga.
I settle down on that. This is, again, not sound ridiculous. The reason I settle down on that is one area that Sale have really struggled over the last year is the line-out. Bryn Evans was not just a clever tactician. He was probably one of the best line-out forwards in the entire league. And without him, I don't know if Lou Diaga's line-out work is as good as Bryn Evans's, which sounds ridiculous, but that's how important he is.
And I would add another element to that, which is Sale's best line-out thrower, best hooker for the line-out, has left the club, and they're left with Aka van der Merwe, who is a very handy player around the park, but his arrows, like I watched him up in Glasgow, and his arrows were not great. So that is an area of weakness, as I see it.
And well, the other one, so I think it's a big upgrade. They can, and I say this is a good thing, it sounds like it's a criticism, it's just a fact, and I understand why they did it, why they've done it. They can field a whole pack of South Africans. You know, that's how Saracens got their momentum when they won their first title. And then, but behind the scrum, it's little things like Sam Hill as a backup for Rowan Janse van Rensburg. Great. Yeah. Now they've got a guy they can plug in. And as you've already said, Manu Tuilagi and Sam James, they've got two guys, every single position, AJ McGinty and Rob Dupree. They've got two people in every single position.
Well, I mean, out of AJ and Rob Dupree, I want to say there is only one starter there, but fine.
Your boy AJ.
Absolutely it is.
But it's a seriously good squad they've got.
Yeah.
Fascinating to see how they manage it all, because they have got very different players. I mean, with Tuilagi being literally a bonus signing, you know, that's what Steve Diamond called him, a bonus signing. I wonder if they use him as such. I wonder if they say, well, he weren't meant to be here. Sam James is ace, and we'll bring you on for the last 20 to wreak havoc, or we'll throw you on the wing, or, you know, I don't think he's going to be the starter. Mind you, I could be horribly wrong there.
Yeah, it's interesting because, like you say, unless you try and fit Tuilagi in at 12, you are changing the way that Sale play.
Won't happen.
Tuilagi's a 13.
He's a 13.
But then you're fundamentally changing the way that Sale have played up to this point in the season, which has stood them in such good stead and got them to second in the league.
But when Rowan Janse van Rensburg hasn't been able to play, they haven't had someone they can plug in. They can, because they've got literally two people or more in every position, they can have a system now which is consistent across all players, which is why I do think they will use Tuilagi as a 13, and it'll be Sam James or Manu.
Yeah, Sam James. Well, there might be another option.
Sam James to fullback?
Yeah, it might be Hammersley that gets the boot.
Mm-hmm.
Brilliantly, and he's one of those unsung guys that, you know, no one raves about him. He doesn't do anything flashy. He's the opposite to Jason Robinson, but he does everything at fullback right.
He's very, very solid and steady. And he'll by having him there, it allows you to have some more flashy guys like Denny, like Marlon Yard on the wings.
Although Byron will be playing on the wings, so
Byron might get a game here or there.
Or no. It'll be Marlon or Denny with so Byron.
We've talked about second position and third position. Let's go to the top of the table and those evil Exeter Chiefs. No, wonderful Exeter Chiefs. I jest, obviously.
Great club.
Well, great club. I kind of wonder if no news is good news. I was saying, this is a settled team. They're professionals. Like a fine wine, they just get better and better and better.
Well, Johnny Gray.
Oh, God, yeah. That's not bad, is it? Does Johnny Gray excite you as any of the other signings? I mean, you know, there's been some absolute blockbusters.
It excites me as an Exeter player.
So I think I'm on record of saying that is the least possible exciting signing you can imagine. Like there is, and certainly the balance of like big name compared to excitement. He's a pretty big name, but he is not exciting. But that might be a very good thing because he's incredibly solid. His work ethic's very good. His tackle success rate is unreal. So you might fit in perfectly.
Is Mitch Lee still there?
No, I think he went a while ago, didn't he? I'm just looking at their squad. No, he is not.
I would say on Exeter, one thing that I think when you looked at their team, they had a lot of guys who were carrying niggles, had lots of injuries. Ollie Woodburn had been on and off with injury. He was one of their best players in recent seasons. Jack Knoll, the same. There was quite a lot of guys who had niggles. I sort of wonder if Exeter have been short of a few players all the time. And they're the sort of team and squad that can cope with that, but that they're going to be able to be in a position to fire on all cylinders.
Yeah, they're going to be a frightening proposition. Now, I want to talk about your quiz, because something was said in that quiz, and I was driving, and when it was said, by the way, I wasn't watching YouTube and driving before. it was very good, just as audio, I might add. And which team has scored the most Premiership tries in a season?
Exeter last year.
Correct. Correct. Exeter.
I got it wrong. I said Saracens the year before. But yeah.
Anybody trying to hide behind the fact that rugby is an evasion game with contact? It is not. It is not. And how do we know this? Because Exeter have got more tries than any other team in Premiership history, predominantly through mauling, which last time I checked involved a lot of contact.
No, evasion. You swerve the whole ruling maul around the entire opposition.
There's a narrative. It's governing bodies telling me what I am seeing is not true. Rugby is a collision sport. It is a collision sport, and some people are lucky enough to evade collision. If you're going to send your kids to play rugby, remember, it is a collision sport. Anyone who's telling you about evasion, if a coach comes up to you and says it's safe to play rugby, it's an evasion sport with contact in it, take them to court.
Well, I'm just imagining the training sessions Rob Baxter's doing if he's doing that organised, swerving, rolling maul.
Fast feet!
Left, right. Speaking of evasion, Exeter have got an interesting signing on that front, which is the younger brother of Santiago Cordero, Facundo Cordero, who I know nothing about, but if he's half as good as his brother, he'll be exciting to watch.
And it's a weird signing which tells you everything you need to know about Exeter. So there's two stories about Exeter which stand out for me. That'll be one of them. And the other one will be the signing of the new Australian scrum half. Is he a scrum? Yeah, he's a scrum.
Fly off,
yes, you're right. Who could have gone to the NRL, which is no joke. But yeah, if your brother is signing for Exeter, you would imagine that you've said some fairly nice things about the club. And this is exactly what that Australian fly-half said, which is chatted to Nick White, who couldn't speak more highly of the place. And that's how they ended up with one of the best Australian talents coming up.
Yeah, it's quite handy, isn't it? You know, because they've had a few Australians. Dean Mum's gone through. What's his name? Greg Holmes has gone back as well to play Super Rugby. And they're all singing the praises of Exeter. It does help.
absolutely. So yeah, Exeter. I mean, they are obviously top of the table. No matter how good Sale are at the moment, they've still got a lot of work to do to become a well-rounded, not a well-rounded team, but an established team.
Battle I don't hard. Know.
So I don't know.
I look at Sale's defence. They're the stingiest defence in the league.
Yeah, but how stingy can you be against those pick and goes?
So I think in a one-off game, it'd be very interesting and very close. I think in a final situation, and in a one-off game, either team could win. But in a final situation, because Exeter have been there, they've been there in Premiership, that team, the vast majority of that team have been there in Premiership and limited experience in Europe, but they've still been there. I would back Exeter if that were to be the final, those two. And those two have been up to this point the best two teams.
I'd back Exeter as well at this point, just exactly for the reasons that Phil says.
And the other, making up the top four, a little bit off the pace, but still in with a very good shout and with a handy team, Northampton Saints.
Well, I mean, I'm just looking at the table. How far down do we consider people that will be chasing the top four? Do you think London Irish will be considering that? They're in eighth and 7 points off fourth. Do you think they'll be starting this run of games thinking, let's try and get a couple of wins early and then see how we go?
Well, theoretically, like mathematically, everyone bar Saracens can make the top four.
Mm.
But based on what we know about the squads and the performances we've seen, I think you could add fifth and sixth. You could add Wasps and Bath, who would have a shot. And if Gustard has really got Quinns firing, I think they would have a shot. But then I think beyond that, Irish, Gloucester, phenomenally disappointing season. Even by their standards, Worcester and Leicester, in my mind, none of those have a chance, and probably rightly, all of those teams should be focusing more on getting their squad fit and ready, prepared for the 20th of November.
Before we go on to the teams below the top three, can I just point out one little sequence? So the second round of matches after the restart, so round 15, Exeter. They play on the Sunday on the they play on the Saturday on the opening weekend. They play the following Friday, and then they play 3 days later. So they have a total of 8 days between in the space of 10 days they have three games, including the second two fixtures, Sale away, the NU.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
A fixture and Bristol away 3 days later. How do you manage that if you're Exeter? Sale away, 3 day break, Bristol away.
Well, I mean, that's a really tough break, isn't it? Because it'd be Sale and then Tigers or whatever. Just two easy games. So those two teams in particular is difficult.
Both away.
I think Exeter are easily the best equipped team to deal with this. So I've got a theory that next season, because there's going to be so much rugby, having a bad squad might not affect you so much. Because if you've got a fairly low rent starting 15, what difference does it make if you've got to go into your reserves and your reserves and your reserves? You're going to be a pretty consistent standard. Whereas if you really rely on your talents talent to win games and they go missing, well, then your heads can go down and so on and so forth. Now, Exeter don't have that many stars. They do have stars, but what they have is team cohesion and a very, very deep team. So they are kind of like the good version of what I was suggesting before, which is they can play pretty much the same way throughout the entire squad. They are by far the best team equipped for this truncated fixture list.
Yeah, it is. It's really interesting though. Like wondering how you're going to manage it. I agree with you, but for example, Exeter's fixtures are Leicester at home, 5-day break. Sale away, 3-day break, Bristol away. Do you go, we're going to send a second team to Sale? I think you probably do. And then, and then do you, if you're Sale, do you try and second guess? Exeter will probably send a weaker team to us when we're at home to them. Because three days after the Exeter game at home, Sale will go to Wasps away. And then 3 days after that, they've got Bristol at home.
And but then for Exeter, Sale are their closest rivals as the league currently stands. Yeah. So can you afford to give Sale a gimme?
Like the, yeah,
for the top four teams, that strategy adds a whole new level of intrigue to the Premiership. For everyone else, it becomes a little bit, well, they're either playing a kind of first team with a few kids, or they're playing kids with a few first teamers, and it doesn't really matter.
Or are players just as a one-off going to play two games in 4 days and just do no training or anything in between, just do rehab? Players will probably love that.
So, some players will. And players will probably be right now just itching to get back. There's one thing with the players loving it. There's another thing with injury risks.
Yeah, the injury risk is enormous, isn't it?
Yeah. How many players can you afford to lose?
It's not the one injury that's a problem. It's the compounding effect. So, like, you lose your player at 12, and then your second 12 has to step in, but then there's no respite for him the next game. And then, you know, before you know it, you're down to your third and fourth 12. That's...
Yeah. And I do think you are right that Exeter probably do have the best equipped squad to deal with that. Both most depth, least drop-off in depth, and most consistency across and cohesion across the whole squad. So it probably will suit them, but still, those games that you've just highlighted, Tim, there's some difficult decisions.
Playing each other.
Yeah.
That's the thing. It's not like they're going, oh, well...
Oh, it's Worcester.
It's Worcester at home. We'll, maybe can drop a few. It's big games all the way.
Yeah.
And Northampton have got they've got a really tough schedule. The teams they're playing, maybe they might think that's a better run-in than some other people, but... Wasps at home, London Irish away, Bath at home, Harlequins away.
Mm. I mean, they'll be hoping for four wins, or certainly three out of four, and probably 15 plus points from that schedule.
Yeah, and looking at that, you kind of think Northampton would have to be favourites for that fourth spot.
Right now, I think
comfortable. Yeah. Well, not comfortable, but. Yeah, I think that they're going to be tough to oust from fourth.
Well, there's a few things I think about this. Number one is Northampton, as the ground gets harder, are going to be more formidable because they can really play. So that's hugely in their favour. Number two is that I think Bath have probably got the biggest squad in that second bunch of three.
Mm.
Christian starts playing a part in it. And yeah, Wasps, by the way, shout out to Wasps. What a phenomenal job.
The lockdown came at just the wrong time for them, didn't it? They were on a roll.
They've got rid of their DOR. They've got what seems like the right man in charge now, which it seems like a bit of an inspired move by Steve Vaughan there. And here they are. They're in fifth. But I do think that Bath, with their bigger squad and truncated fixtures, it sort of plays into their hands a bit more.
I think you might be right, actually. And can I just to highlight, not to go into every fixture, but just to highlight that everybody's in key positions. All the top three are all playing each other. The that cluster chasing fourth position. Northampton play Wasps and Bath. Bath play Northampton and Wasps, obviously. They're all playing each other. Yeah. So there's big games. I think the Bath Northampton game in the third round on the 26th of August. That could be decisive. That could be huge.
Of that second kind of second tier, second three teams in the league, none of them have made many big signings. So, like, Wasps have brought in Ryan Mills, who'll be more than a handy squad player. He's a very good player.
Yeah,
he's a very good all-round player with a supreme skill set. But that's about it.
He's one of those perfect guys that's just off international calibre, but not far off. Perfect Premiership player.
Yes, yeah, exactly. And he gets, like, Worcester have got a lot of game time out of him over the last few years. Certainly a lot more than, say, Bentio, who would have been paid a significant chunk more than him.
True.
So Wasp, that's their only real sign-in.
Have I told you about the Bentio thing? Story. I'm claiming it as my own. It's not my own. I'm thinking I might have heard it from another podcast, actually.
You've not told me.
Have we got another level of Pete Tio? Do I need to get the horn ready?
No, it was something. It was quite funny. I'm going to say this came from another podcast in case I get called out on it, and I can't remember who it was, but whoever... it was Worcester sold Bentio on the vision of the club, which was great. He's obviously playing in Dublin. He's having a great time there. And one of the things Bentio said is, look, I've got problems with my ankle or my knee or whatever body part on him was falling to pieces. I hear you're getting a new 4G pitch. I'm also like, no, absolutely not, Ben. There was no way that we'd ever do that. Anyway, shows up on the first day, and what's there? Not just a 4G pitch in the stadium, but also a 4G practice pitch, which might go some way to explaining why Bentio never really played for Worcester, but was always available to play in Twickenham.
That and the super fast Wi-Fi in the academy house where he was lodging.
Obviously.
Yeah. So Northampton signings, Ezekwe on loan, handy, albeit I've probably never seen. I've never seen as much as I've wanted to out of Nick Ezekwe. I know he's a good all-round player and he's versatile, but I've just never seen that next level of performance from him.
Go on.
That's about it.
You find a player's signature game, don't you? The game where like Manu against Ireland. Mind you, he's had plenty of signature games.
He's got a lot of game tape, you might say.
Yeah. Nick Ezekwe's signature game, well, not so good. He got replaced by
Brad Shepherd's Crook. Got the Shepherd's Crook.
After 19 minutes or whatever it was.
Which is what one thing it does allow is big courts to go on the blindside flank and have an extra line out jumper. They could be a menace at a set piece.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I tell you what, I really like Ribbons too.
He's awesome.
Like Rivens.
He's a great Premiership player. Yeah, he's put, again, in the mould of Ryan Mills. He's the perfect Premiership player. He's there for 22 games. Well, he has been injured a little bit, but...
And there's another big second row that I know. I can't remember who he is.
Moon,
that's the one. He's like Moon. He is also a very good player.
Very good player.
Yeah, are we in a podcast where I just name players and say they're good? they're professional athletes and they play for one of the best teams in the country. I'll just name them and say they're good.
What have Quinn's done? Besides Carl Sinclair going out,
Not rid of one of the most dynamic wingers in the Premiership. That was exciting. That thing that happened.
They brought in certainly formerly one of the most dynamic wingers in the Premiership, in Chris Ashton.
That was the best timing. Chris Ashton's timing on that deal was so good.
Mate,
he must have known what was coming. He must have someone at the World Health Organization or someone in Wuhan that just gave him the tip off.
Yeah. He scored every try he's ever had with excellent timing. I mean, it makes no, it doesn't. He would do it again. You know, well done, Chris, for that.
The big signing for Quinns is Andre Esterhazen, the South African centre, who is. Oh.
I would say the big signing was the prop.
Is that Vilko? No. Vilko Low. Vilko Mario Low.
Yeah, that to me is a bigger one than Esterhazen. But you like Esterhazen?
I do like Esterhazen, actually. I mean, he's a big, strong boy. Do you want to know how big he is? Do you want to have a guess?
Exactly what I'd like to know. I don't care about his skills. His kicking, I don't care about...
6'4", 17 and a half stone.
So he's listed as 6'4.5", 194 yeah. centimetres,
yes.
and 115 kg, which is a smidge over 18 stone.
Oh!
Coming into a channel near you.
So he is a big, strong boy. I think I'm right in saying that he was the boy who Owen Farrell did a no-arms tackle on to finish the game
oh,
in
yeah.
the 2018 November Internationals. I think...
The one where Razzie Erasmus afterwards was doing that fake coaching session to teach people how to coach tackling with no arms.
Yes, that one.
Well, yeah, well remembered, Phil. Yeah, I think low is an important sign. Well, I would. I think, you know, solidifying your set piece and having a prop that can be destructive, that and your second rows are your two most important signings. But, oh, hang on. Whilst we're on big centres, I know it's got nothing to do with what we're talking about, but why not? Jamie Roberts has gone to the Dragons. What's all that about?
Yeah, wants to go back home.
Why? I mean, why?
Probably, I assume that all of, well, South Africa rugby where he's playing at the Stormers, that's not happening right now. France, he's been there, done that, and there's probably not a huge amount of money floating around. All the centre slots in the Japanese league have been taken up by Kiwis. And so there probably weren't that many options left on the table.
I thought maybe he might have done another stint at Oxford or Cambridge, but there's not going to be no varsity game so in November, so you can't go and slay it on campus for a few months.
So this is why this move doesn't make sense to me. Think about this. Jamie Roberts, young man, handsome man, by the way, particularly in his formative years. In Wales, there is probably no better place to play your rugby, is there, than Cardiff. Cardiff is the main place to be in Wales if you're a young man, hands down. So he does that, tick in the box. Paris, tick in the box, awesome. London, tick in the box, awesome. Bath, he's an older, more refined gent now, tick in the box, awesome. He's also done the Cambridge thing, tick that box too. Newport.
Cape Town. Don't forget Cape Town.
Cape Town. Tick that. This makes no sense whatsoever. Unless you're signing for Newport Beach.
Yeah, maybe you ran out of options. I will just mention the Bath signings. So they've signed the Spencer brothers, the Big Spencer and Little Spencer, which is Ben Spencer from Saracens and Will Spencer from Leicester.
Yeah, right.
Spencer twins.
Yeah, Spencer twins. Not really twins.
And like Nathan and Ben Earl at Saracens, twins. We're twins.
Yeah, but legitimately, which one's faster?
It's a good question. It'd be a good race.
Good question, yeah. And they've also signed a South African prop from Southern Kings. So he'll be a handy squad player. But yeah, in that next tier down...
They re-signed Faletau. That was a big one. We thought Faletau would be on his way.
Yeah.
So they retained him.
Retained him and lost Francois Lowe, retired. Yeah.
That's a shame. That's an end of an era in Bath. He is such an awesome player.
Yeah.
He is. That's not to disparage him at all, but they won't miss him.
Go on. Just because...
Because look at their back row.
Awesome. Yeah.
They won't miss him.
I don't know. I mean, he came on, sealed off the world final for South Africa. I'd miss him. I mean, I'm not saying that I'd miss him. Yeah, I would. Anyone who's that good, are you going to miss? Or you say
they wouldn't miss him like they'd miss Anthony Watson or
yeah. He's
there is other people of equivalent quality that are ready to do a job. But not least Sam Underhill.
Well,
like Ben Curry, they'd be okay.
they might be okay.
Or Mark Wilson. If Mark Wilson left, they'd be okay.
Well, Mark Wilson has gone, hasn't he? He won't be playing this period.
Yeah.
The problem with Bath's back row and why Francois Lowe is so handy is because Francois Lowe has incredible robustness. And, for example, Talupe Faletau and Sam Underhill do have a bit of a track record for putting their body in places where they shouldn't and being injured for long periods of time.
So, they've got Zach Mercer in their back row as well, don't forget.
Mercer is class.
Yeah, they'll be all right.
Yeah, I mean, if you get those three on the pitch at the same time, that is a unbelievably good back row.
Seriously, yeah,
name power alone, right? Bath got to get to fourth, and if they don't, it's a disappointment.
Yeah,
who do you think will?
Bath. I'd like Northampton or Wasps to do it, but I think Bath will, and I think it'll be undeserving.
I think Northampton will. I just like Chris Boyd too much. And I think the way that they were playing, and JB mentioned it before, the way that they were playing before, they started the season well. They had a bit of a dip when the weather went bad. And now they're going to be concluding this season in pretty much great conditions. So that it suits them this time of year.
Bath fixtures aren't bad, you know. But then, no, you know what? No, I'm going to go Northampton as well. And it's all on that home game against Bath on the 26th of August. Northampton beat Bath at home. They'll be home and hosed for the playoffs.
I mean, in terms of the fixtures, so we're only just over halfway through the season, aren't we? We've got 9 regular games.
I mean, of course, I'm only looking at the ones till the end of August.
So almost everyone plays almost everyone.
Yeah.
So the fixtures... It will play out unless you've already avoided, say, Exeter Chiefs and Sale or Exeter and Bristol. Then you've got as good a chance as anyone.
Yeah, I think Northampton will edge it. As for the fixtures for the opening weekend, Harlequins v Sale on the Friday night at the Stoop, at London Irish's ground, the Stoop.
Yeah, they're finishing their season there, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. But they'll hate that because they London Irish and Quinns, big rivals. In recent years, because of London Irish being poor, it's been more lopsided towards London Irish having the rivalry. But it'll be good to see that one stoked back up again.
Yeah, but Quinns really hate... I mean, I think Quinns have forgotten a little bit about Irish because Quinns really hate...
They hate Saracens, yeah.
But Saracens don't even know it, which is really sad. Saracens weren't even aware of the rivalry.
So yeah, predictions then. So are we all saying it's going to finish with Exeter, Sale and Bristol in top three?
Yeah, not necessarily in that order.
I think it will be, but I'm very, very excited to see what Bristol have done in this period. Bristol are they're the one for me who they had a good team anyway, and they've strengthened it, in my opinion, more than anyone else.
I think this is absolutely no disrespect to Bath or Northampton or Wasps or anyone else, but I think all three of those teams will be desperate to get top spot so they don't have to play those other two teams.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Everyone fighting for top spot. Because if it is, well... any of those next three, if they're in second and third place, home advantage is not really an advantage because any of them can beat any of them.
Mm. Well, I don't know. Coming to the hell pit, which is the AJ Bell.
Be like a normal match day with no fans in there.
Don't know what you mean.
So, Quinns at home to Sale.
I have got a... horrible feeling for neutrals. This might not be as straightforward as we think. I've seen Sale go to the Stoop, albeit in very different conditions, pouring down rain, and I've seen Danny Kerr just be magical. If they can control Danny Kerr, I think it will all come down to that really. But if Danny Kerr can outsmart Faf, which is absolutely a possibility because he's got so much class, Sale could easily find themselves on the wrong end of a result here. That said, when I saw Harlequins up at the AJ Bell, they weren't up to much. So,
yeah, I'm just flicking through the Quinns team. I think this will be a good win for Sale. Actually, I think they'll start this chunk of the season right, and big win for Sale.
I tend to agree with that. As for the Saturday, all the games are kind of staggered. There will be, I think, overlap with a couple of them. But generally speaking, you can definitely catch some, if not all, of every game. Worcester v Gloucester.
No.
Don't
Don't know. If you lost.
Home win.
Yeah. Worcester at home.
Exeter, Leicester, home win.
Yes. It's just like by how many tens of points that Exeter win that.
Yes. This will be a rude awakening for the new Leicester Tigers.
Mm. London Irish West v London Irish East. London Irish West at home.
Yeah, Bath.
Bath. And then Brizzle versus Saracens.
Yeah, that's interesting. So Saracens obviously relegated. Now they've had an unusual recruitment position because they've lost some talent. Guys like Liam Williams, who left early in the season, like Goode and Cruis. They've retained a few guys who are basically leaving at the end of the season, like Wigglesworth and Brad Barrett. And they've kept all of their big-name talent, all of the prime big-name talent, with the exception of maybe Cruis. So the Vunipolas, Itoje, Jamie George, Owen Farrell, Elliot Daly, all retained. Now, I can't help but think Saracens, probably rightly, just don't care about the Premiership. Their entire focus will be on their trip to Dublin in late
20th of September.
20th, 21st, that weekend, late September, to go and beat what will be a totally full-strength, nearly island team in Leinster.
I trust Mark McCall to do the right thing. Because he's amazing. That said, if I see any of those big name players on a Premiership pitch without very good reason, maybe for like a half just to get match fit before the Leinster game, maybe something like that. But I don't want to see them. I don't want to see them on a Premiership field. I don't want to see them risking injury to nothing. Keep your powder dry and wait for Europe.
And for that reason, I just think it'll be a home win. I think all that I'm predicting. Home winning all the games on Saturday.
Yeah.
Final one, Northampton versus Wasps on the Sunday.
Ooh. Not bad at all, this one. Well, it's going to go a long way to predicting how the season's going to kind of pan out, I think.
Yeah.
Where are they playing?
At Franklin's Gardens. But well, without the Franklin's Gardens crowd, which is does create a great atmosphere there.
And also, remember this, Wasps had an unexpected victory against Northampton at the Rico. Now, I don't want to drop names, but I was there with Carol Vorderman. and Wasps should not have won that. I think Northampton will have that very keenly in the forefront of their mind, and they will beat Wasps.
Yeah, give me Northampton.
So home wins, except for Friday, when it'll be an away win.
Correct.
Interesting. Mm. And by the way, on the Sunday, it's 4:30 a.m. Just to complete an amazing weekend of rugby, the Blues v the Crusaders, which will be a pretty tasty match.
Is that then?
No, the Sunday.
Oh, right. Sorry, yeah, we put it on the Friday. Sorry.
Yeah.
That is going to be very, very tasty. I just want to mention one other thing, which is, obviously I know the Premiership don't have anyone of my calibre administering the game.
Naturally.
Yeah.
But should they have someone of my calibre? The one thing which has escaped them is the advantages of not having a crowd. I think everyone saw, not having a crowd.
Yeah, I get away much quicker from the stadiums. That's the big advantage.
That, right? But the sport of rugby is no longer a spectator sport, is it? It's now a TV sport for as long as these awful restrictions remain.
Yeah.
Anyway,
yeah.
I'm going. Mentioned it on the podcast before. I'll mention it. They should have scouted out some unbelievable locations. So on TV, at least, it's an amazing spectacle. So you could have, and this is not a joke, you could have played a game on HMS Queen Elizabeth. No problem. It's easily big enough, and it would look amazing on TV. You could play a game at the Honourable Artillery Company in the City of London.
Build a game. Build a whole pitch near, just with the Stonehenge as the backdrop.
Yeah, well,
awesome.
I mean, if it's not beautiful enough there already, they can remove the temporary stands. It'd look amazing.
Yeah, that's a good point. You just need like a few TV gantries.
Yeah, just
in fact, that there will be spectators at the Bath game. So I lived in Bath, and the railings on Pulteney Street, you can see most of the pitch from there. So I used to go there and catch a game occasionally.
Unbelievable. Yeah, so I think they have missed out a little bit like that because you know, some of the locations you could have had would be spectacular because you don't need to worry about the fans. But obviously, they never consulted me again.
I mean, there is an issue with cameras and everything, and there was talk initially of using the Rico and one other ground, which I can't remember, to do all of the games.
You know why the Rico was mentioned?
Wi-Fi.
It is Wi-Fi. Well, linked to Wi-Fi. It is because they can control all the cameras in the Rico without a camera operator.
Yeah, remotely.
Ah, okay.
So that's why the Rico was...
But they were talking about having set stadiums and all the teams just go to the stadium and play all the game one after the other. But
which is what they've done. Is it MLS have been playing an NBA?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't really like that, to be honest.
It depends. Like, in where you've got, like, basketball or football or soccer, where you can play kind of a game every 2 days, it kind of makes sense. Whereas rugby, because even in this condensed fixture schedule, there's occasionally the three-day turnaround, but the games have to be more spread apart. So it makes less sense.
Unless they decamped everyone to the Thunderdome in Paris and did it there.
And yeah, they just one after the other never stop. You have about 5 hours between games.
like a sevens tournament.
I was offered a place once with big solicitors in Manchester, who I can't remember who they are now, so I apologise to them. I was offered a space to play a 24-hour game for a world record, and I couldn't because I was away somewhere. I can't remember where I went. I went on holiday, so I couldn't accept it. But yeah, I think you got subs, but you had to play for 24 hours. I thought, yeah, that sounds like fun, until it's not.
Like Le Mans.
Yeah, Le Mans rugby.
Can you imagine the standard of rugby after 22 and a half hours?
Sadly, mine would be pretty consistent.
No drop-off in performance.
Yeah, more handling skills.
Right, I think we're done on the Premiership, don't you?
There was one other thing I wanted to mention. But, yeah, no, it's gone. Oh, yeah, thank you for everyone. Thank you to everyone for subscribing. We had a quick look at our subscriptions. And, yeah, when you've got so many choices and so little rugby to watch, it means an awful lot that you're still bothering to subscribe and download. So thank you very much.
Agreed.
Absolutely. Definitely.
Agreed. So charge up your Negroni and enjoy the rugby this weekend.
Perfect.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.